Good morning. I'm Dr. William T. Choctaw, and I'd like to welcome you to another exciting episode of the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise podcast. These podcasts are based on my 75 years of experience and over 50 years of surgical practice. What we cover, we like to explore the mental and physical health of our listeners. We explore strategies to enhance mental well-being, maintain physical health, and achieve overall vitality. We're interested in giving you tips for effective leadership and personal empowerment. We view the mind, body, and spirit as interconnected components, and by addressing each facet, we create a cumulative strength greater than the sum of the parts. Recognizing the unique needs of men, women, adults, and children, we offer that advice that resonates with diverse audiences. We believe that happiness lies within our control, in each of us. Our discussions attempt to empower our listeners to tap into their innate joy. We also explore how technology can enhance daily success and well-being. And we look at generational perspectives from the alpha generation to baby boomers. So join us every month, including today, for an inspiring, encouraging, and informative journey toward a full, well-rounded, and happy life. Today, we're going to talk about anxiety. And specifically, we're going to give you advice or some suggestions about thought reframing, which is a way of dealing with, or certainly one way of dealing with anxiety. This is part of our masterclass medicine series, and we cover a variety of topics, as we mentioned earlier. I always like to start off with my belief, our beliefs. There are three of them. I believe that life is about service to others. We believe it is important that we not only take care of ourselves, but we take care of others around us. I believe knowledge is power. We believe that by empowering ourselves, receiving knowledge, that we can then be more effective in terms of helping our fellow human beings. And finally, I believe that leadership, that knowledge can change the world, and that leaders can change the world. So as always, as we get into our topic today about anxiety, we start with the mind. And the mind is located, in my opinion, in the brain. And it is important that we understand, I believe, the significance of having mental, physical, and spiritual health. And one of the ways to recognize that significance is to recognize the connection of the mind, body, and the spirit in terms of keeping us healthy. That if there's a problem in one area, almost invariably, that then spills over into the other area. And as always, we like to put up an outline, and the purpose of the outline is to let you know what we're going to talk about, and as importantly, to let you know when we're just about done. So we're going to define anxiety. We like to give definitions. We find that by giving definitions, that improves communication bilaterally and increases understanding. We're going to talk about causes of anxiety, scope and degree, a very important concept. We're going to talk about ways and give some suggestions about how to stop negative thoughts. And we'll talk about thought reframing. So let's start with the brain function. As always, and we've been doing these podcasts for about 2 years now, and one of the exciting parts of that endeavor is to go back and revisit basic anatomy. I'm a general surgeon, and so I love anatomy, of course, among the other different disciplines of medicine. So if we go to the brain, we recognize the fact that the cerebral cortex, i.e. where the forehead is and going backwards, is where our thought and planning occurs. I liken it to the CEO of the body, if you will, chief executive officer of the body. That's really what the brain is, and that's really particularly the prefrontal cortex of the cerebral cortex of the brain. So this is the area of the brain where we do our thinking and our planning and our thoughts and that sort of thing. And one of the things that's important to recognize is that the brain, basically our beliefs are connected to our thoughts, and our thoughts are connected to our feelings, and our feelings affect our behavior. Let me say that a different way. What we believe affects what we think. What we think affects how we feel, and how we feel affects how we act. So if for some reason you don't believe that you are acting in the appropriate way or the way that you should be acting, I would suggest to you to go back and find out and discover what belief is attached to that thought, that feeling, and that behavior, and change your belief. Just simply change your belief. It's your belief, doesn't belong to anybody else. And so if you don't like it, change it. So as we talk about anxiety, even though that sounds very simplistic, but as we talk about anxiety, we're going to be focusing on that brain thought feeling behavior connection. If one were to do a Wordle, W-O-O-R-D-L-E, on anxiety, you would get a number of different words to come up, like negative, mood, loneliness, failure, panic, fear, stress, nervousness, disorder, insomnia, scared, agitation. Today, we're going to focus on anxiety. And so to start off with, let's define it. As I said, we always like to define our terms here because we believe that improves communication overall. Anxiety, by definition, is a feeling of apprehension or fear. Let me say that again. Anxiety is a feeling of apprehension or fear. The source of this uneasiness is not always known or recognized, which can add to the distress of the way you feel. Anxiety disorders are a group of psychiatric conditions that involve excessive anxiety. My point very simply is we're going to be talking about general anxiety, not anxiety disorders. And the way to view that is if you look at anxiety, think of it in terms of scope and degree. We probably all have some anxiety, myself included, but we don't all have anxiety disorders. What's the difference? The difference is scope and degree. I may be afraid of dogs if I'm walking down the street and I hear a dog barking. That may make me afraid and very apprehensive. But I don't encounter dogs that much in my life. So it's not a disorder for me, meaning that it does not interfere with my activity. It does not have a profound influence over how I feel most of the time. And so that's what I mean by scope. How broad is it? How often is it? How frequent is it? And if it's very, very limited scope, which it probably is in most of us, some anxiety, some fear, something, then that's not a disorder in general. And the same thing with degree. Degree depends on or is defined as how deep it is, how profound is it. And that goes also to how frequent is it. So for the most part, our discussions today are going to be about general anxiety. Now, one of the challenges, obviously, as a patient, and certainly if you're non-clinical, it's difficult many times to distinguish between, or may be difficult many times to distinguish between anxiety and an anxiety disorder. So what I've always told my patients is, if you're worried, seek help. Don't try to figure it out. Don't try to be a physician. Don't try to be a medical person. And even if you are a medical person, your anxiety, that may make it even more challenging. So whenever you're worried, whenever you're concerned, seek help, ask for advice, bring it up when you meet with your primary care physician, or go to the emergency room, go to the clinic, or schedule an appointment to meet with your healthcare professional. Okay. So one concept to keep in mind as we talk about anxiety is scope, how broad is it, and degree. how common, how often, how severe is it? One of the ways to control that's been recommended to control anxiety or decrease it is to recognize that anxiety comes from our negative thoughts. We see something or hear something or experience something, and then we immediately get a negative thought. I'm driving on the freeway, let's say hypothetically, and someone cuts me off. And I immediately get upset and I start yelling and screaming at the car in front of me because I get a negative thought. You know, you cut me off because you are in a hurry and you're not responsible and you're dangerous and blah, blah, blah. And I have all these negative thoughts because of what I just saw. But I'm going to suggest to you that if we can control our negative thoughts we may very well be able to decrease our anxiety level more. Say that again. If we can control the quantity of our negative thoughts, not so many of them, we may very well be able to decrease our anxiety level. Because basically, anxiety or fear is based on something bad, something negative. So it's important that we control those thoughts and have that then mitigate our degree of anxiety. And again, I'm talking about general anxiety, not anxiety disorders. And certainly one of the suggestions, some of the suggestions of a number of ways to handle negative thoughts. And again, you know, there are positive thoughts and negative thoughts. And whatever you think of something that's negative, you want to do that less. And part of that is because many times, and I'll use myself as an example, I have learned in my 76 years of existence that over 90% of the time, not 50%, not 45%, over 90% of the time, when I have a negative thought about something that I have perceived that has occurred to me or said or done, I am wrong. Over 90% of the time, it's probably 95% of the time. What's my point? My point is that I've really learned in my experience to take a step back and to reevaluate before reacting to something that I perceive as negative. Now, your thoughts may not be, you may not be 90% wrong as I am, but I'm going to suggest to you that you're probably more wrong than you think you are. And my suggestion is that whenever a negative thought comes up, doesn't matter what it is, it could be boss, coworker, family member, husband, wife, kids, doesn't matter. Stop immediately and reevaluate yourself. So be conscious of your thoughts. Just sort of say, well, you know, maybe it's not that way, particularly if it's negative. Maybe it's not that way. And then look at other chances or possibilities that may have occurred or may be the reason for that occurrence. Another way to avoid negative thoughts, when I was growing up, they used to say, idle mind is the devil's workshop. And translation of that, as I understood as a kid growing up in Nashville, was, you know, you want to keep busy. You don't want to just be sitting around doing stuff, because when you're sitting around not doing anything, you start thinking of bad stuff and all that. I don't know whether that's true or not. But my point is that if you are active, and whether you're working, whether you're retired, whatever your station in life is, if you're active, many times that tends to involve your thinking, because it'll be a part of whatever you're doing, and that tends to decrease or minimize those negative thoughts. And the belief is that those negative thoughts occur when you don't have anything to do. You're sitting around and you're just sort of thinking, I don't know, thinking about the world or the news or whatever. I should parenthetically suggest certainly minimize your reading and listening to the news. Now, I say that as someone who basically listens to the news every single day or watches it every single day. But I have to do it in moderation, is my point, because otherwise I'll be thinking negative thoughts all the time. Avoid triggers, number three, to your negative thoughts. Now, what's a trigger? A trigger is something or someone or some circumstance that automatically makes you uncomfortable. A circumstance or someone or something that automatically makes you uncomfortable. Maybe that's a person at work who just gets on your nerves for whatever reason. You know, and so my point is, if you can, try to avoid them. You know, don't go to lunch with them. Don't hang out with them. Try to develop a different circle from them. And this is intentionality, of course. But my point is that if you can control all those negative influences that are affecting your way of thinking, you can certainly in short term and long term decrease your negative thoughts and decrease your level of anxiety. Because remember, many times when we have these levels of anxiety, we don't know what the cause is. And one could argue that it may be accumulation of things that occur over time that then just always has us on edge. And we don't know which one specifically is that trigger. So just keep that in mind. So be aware of your environment, mentally, physically. And if there's someone who's always negative, probably not include them in your inner circle. You want to be around positive. You want to be around positive people. You want to be around people that lift you up, that inspire you, that make you go, aha, or wow. You know, that's what you want to be. As a poet who once said, hitch your wagon to a star. And I remember reading that growing up, that you want to hitch your wagon to celestial bodies, things that are high up, because that's what you want to achieve as compared to something that's down low on earth. You want it. Number four, you want to get rest. And believe it or not, that is related to how you think. Because if you don't get your proper amount of sleep, and I'm going to suggest that this increases with age, significance of getting sleep or rest increases with age, that many times you wake up not rested, irritable, maybe angry or anxious. And many argue that the purpose of sleep, particularly REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, REM, is to work out all those mental and psychological things. Because remember, many years ago, we physicians used to think that sleep is where the body just shuts down completely. And now more and more studies are suggesting that that's not really the case, that the body does not completely shut down. We consciously shut down, but obviously the heart and the lungs and everything continue to act. But the brain is also very, very active. The brain does not shut down. And some believe that the brain is sort of cleaning up all the stuff that happened the previous, 8 to 16 hours. So my point is, whichever is correct, that sleep, 7 hours minimum, I'm going to say, is very important. And I did a podcast on this not too long ago. And so if you're not able to get 7 or 8 hours in a row, do what I call power napping, and if you can take a 30 to 45 minute nap during the day, say at home or whatever, that many times can help you deal with not having that night sleep of 7 or 8 hours. But my point is, sleep is important, so just keep that in mind. And certainly you can do things like listen to music. There are some people who on podcasts or otherwise always have a certain amount of music, and they choose the music that they like, and that helps them. Now, other things that one can do to stop negative thinking, like meditate, if you're able to do that. Some people like to journal. They like to write down their thoughts. And I would encourage you to do that, because a lot of times we may not be aware of the quantity of negative thoughts that we have. Sometimes if we write them all down and we start turning pages and we see 3, 4, and 5 pages, that may very well be an aha moment. So that's one way. Be creative, take up a craft or join a group or do something you enjoy. Substitute negative thoughts with positive ones. And that's one of the things that I try to do. And I'll talk about that a bit later. We call that reframing. And obviously don't jump to conclusions. So one of the things that's probably easiest to do is just be aware of when the negative thought occurs. Be aware when the negative thought occurs. And then just stop right there and ask yourself the question, is that true Or am I just thinking that? Did he really mean that when he said it that way? Or did she mean it when she said it that way or not? You'll be amazed at how that would improve your relationship also. In other words, don't jump to conclusions. So how do you use thought reframing to decrease anxiety, meaning not think negative thoughts, things that frighten you, et cetera, et cetera? And one of the things that I have found that have helped me is the principle of controlling the controllables. Controlling the controllables. Now, backstory. Again, I'm a general surgeon. And so you can imagine what my mentality is sort of like. You know, we surgeons sort of go in and we want to be in control. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But my point is that you want that everything is not controllable. Everything is not controllable. And I'm going to suggest to you, I have kids and I'm sure you probably do also. You may think you're in control of your children. I'm going to suggest you probably are not as in control of them as you think you are. But regardless, recognize the importance of controlling what you can control and not trying to control those things that you cannot. Do not try to put that round peg into a square hole. It won't fit. And it does not matter how long you try and how hard you try and how dedicated you are about it. It's not going to work. And so the sooner you recognize, you know what, I can't control this. And most of the times, I'm going to suggest that that's going to be other people, right? We can control ourselves, theoretically, but then we try to control other people around us, employee, spouse, kids, coworkers, friends, family, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm going to suggest, don't do that. I don't do it as much. And recognize the limitation of that. Now, certainly in terms of children, I'm not saying that you should not do anything with the children, but influence, in my opinion, is as important as control. Because I think control is an illusion anyway, and I'm talking about the children. So you always want to have influence over your children. You want to have communication lines, you want to have a good relationship with them, so that you can have influence. But many times, the controlling aspect is not as effective as you think. So one of the things that we're interested in, that I'm particularly interested in with these podcasts, is the fact that we humans have a tremendous amount of power within ourselves. And much of that is in the brain and other parts of the body. And so what I'm trying to suggest is to have us to look at that person in the mirror, have a conversation with that person, an honest conversation, and look at ways that we can change that we have control over. I'm going to further suggest that we don't have control over anybody else but ourselves, regardless of what we may think. So if we can just adopt that basic principle, it may very well go a long distance in terms of having us being less anxious, having less anxiety, consequently having less stress. Many times when patients would come to my office when I was practicing actively, and they would be so stressed by whatever. And one of the things that I would say is that frequently when you're very, very stressed and they're running around doing this and that and the other, is not being able to say no, N-O, enough. Many times when you find yourself super stressed, especially if you're a busy person, And most people who are good are busy, you know, that you're superstars and you do this and you do that and they want you to go here and they want you to go there and on and on and on and on. But you have to develop the ability to say no, N-O, more often. Because when you say no, you then take back some of your control. And you can say no with a smile. You can say no and then say, I love you. You can say no and give a hug, but no means no. Two letters, one word, one syllable. Say no more, and you'll be amazed at how that'll make things a little less chaotic in your life. And again, the other principle, too, is that influence is more important than control. And finally, One of the things that I have learned, and I've mentioned on many of these podcasts that I am a person of faith, but one of the prayers, if you will, and I bet you're familiar with this prayer also, that really fits perfectly into our discussion today about control and about anxiety and about stress is a prayer called the Serenity Prayer. And I'm going to bet that most of you have heard of it, if not said it. And the Serenity Prayer very simply says, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference between the two. Let me say that again. The Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference between the two. And indeed, that prayer, in my judgment, summarizes what we've been talking about for the last half an hour or so, that you can't control everything. By letting go that illusion of control, focusing on yourself, your negative thoughts, and controlling those thoughts within you, and being able to distinguish between those things that you can and cannot control will give you serenity, peace, and will decrease your anxiety. And also it will increase your courage because you'll be encouraged by seeing positive results. And when you add that serenity plus the courage together, I call that wisdom. Thank you so much for being with us today. And as we always like to say, be the change that you want to see in the world. Have a great day.